This interview is sponsored by WooFoo, where you can create surveys, order forms, contact form, mailing list registrations, buy forms, and so many other forms that you can embed into your website. Check out WooFoo.com and sign up for free. Within minutes, you'll have their forms and surveys on your website. It's also sponsored by Shopify. Check out these three different stores that were created on the Shopify.com platform. If you go to Shopify right now, you'll be able to create your own store too. And it's sponsored by Grasshopper. Need a phone number with extensions? Need a phone number you can add to your website? Need a phone number where you can be reached no matter where you are in the world? I use Grasshopper and you can too. Inexpensive, the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love and that you can get set up with right now. Check out grasshopper.com. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And today's guest was called the smartest unknown Indian entrepreneur by Forbes magazine. The article is a little bit old, but it's been passed around on Hacker News. I guess it was passed around about a month ago. So I said, let me see if I could get the smartest unknown Indian entrepreneur here to Mixergy to do an interview, to find out who he is, how he built his company, what makes him so smart, and to see how much of his information we can suck in and learn from and build our business based on. So his name is Sridhar Venbu. He is the co-founder of Zoho. Zoho is an online application provider. He is a guy who's competing against Microsoft, who's now competing against Google, who's been in this space for a long time. And it's all been bootstrapped. And tell me if I'm wrong, profitable still?
Yes.
Still profitable. Can you give us a sense of how profitable?
No, we don't disclose numbers. We are still private. We have never taken any outside money. We do all these application, so we must be doing something right.
Well, can you give us just a sense of how profitable? You don't have to give me the exact number, but if you say something like over $1,000 a year in profits, that'll give us one understanding. If you say over $1 million a month in profit, that'll give us another understanding. Anything that you feel comfortable sharing that'll give us a sense of how big you are without revealing anything that your competition
is? Well, let me say it this way. This company is now 14 year old. And it is, it was bootstrapped a long time ago. It's not that recent. So we, in Valley cycle, we would have gone through two or three companies. We just have been evolving through this. We have built an engineering team. We have built a sales and marketing team. So we are a pretty substantial company. So I would say that we are closer to some public companies now than a private company.
I see. Okay. And a couple of years ago when that article was written, they said that it was 100% bootstrapped and that you guys did $40 million a year in revenue. And that you send $1 million to the bank every month in profits. So you're much more willing to tell Forbes information about your finances than little old with his operation.
No, it's not. 2 years ago is different from now, but we have grown since then. That's all I can say.
Okay. All right, this is a very exciting story. Anyone who's building a business, I think, is going to be inspired by this, and as I said in the intro, is going to be able to learn a lot from it. So let's go back to when you launched the business. In fact, let's go before that. As I understand it, you were an engineer at Qualcomm, and so was your brother. What were you guys doing there?
Yeah, so I actually was designing algorithms for CDMA, specifically the algorithms that control the power consumption in the cell phone. So those types of things, and that's what I was designing. So my background is not software. It's really DSP. Digital signal processing and communication, that kind of stuff. So that's what I was doing then.
Okay. Did you have the idea that at some point you were going to start a business?
Not really. When I actually finished Princeton and I went to Qualcomm, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to design algorithms for a living. Then my brother actually, who was a software engineer in Qualcomm, and at that point we used to talk about what's going on in India. We both, of course, come from India, so so we were talking about these, and that's part of how these things happen. And then we partnered with a friend of ours who was in Bell Labs, who was also Indian, and who was thinking similar thoughts. So the three of us came together, and that's how it happened.
Can you tell me about your friend, the one that you co-founded? This is Tony Thomas, right?
Tony Thomas, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how did you know him?
Yeah, he was actually 3 years ahead of me in college in India, IIT Madras. And we had common friends. And then he was in Bell Labs when I was in Princeton, so we ended up meeting on some social occasions. So that's how I knew him.
But you said that he went to school in India with a name like Thomas?
Well, in India, good number of Christians, actually, maybe 20, 30 million of them. So.
Is he native Indian?
Yes, of course.
I see. Okay. So he was a friend of yours who you knew from school who was building this company already in India.
Well, he was in Bell Labs, and he had similar ideas that doing something in India. So that's how we came together.
Okay, I see. And the way I understood it, he got a buyout offer from Bell Labs. And so he took the buyout offer and he used that to help bootstrap the business.
At that time. So he was in Bell Labs at that time when this AT&T was splitting itself up into Lucent. This is all very old history. Most people may not even know these things now. So the present day AT&T company then, the Bell Labs part split off. As part of all this, they gave buyouts to a lot of people.
And he took
Tony was one of the research staff, and he took it.
Okay. Can you give us a, can you tell us a little bit about what those discussions were before you guys launched? How did you think you were going to organize the business? What was the business going to be?
Yeah, at first there wasn't any business. I mean, Tony, when he took the buyout, he started writing code at home, while myself and my brother were sitting around dreaming up what to do, basically. And my brother said, I'll go back to India and we'll start there. So he went back to India. And coincidentally, Tony ended up making a call to me and saying, can you guys help me out on this? So because, you know, your brother is in India. So that's, and we said, okay, we'll, so my brother hired a couple of engineers to help him out on the software. So that's, at that time, there was still not a business. It was just three guys cooperating on some software in three different places.
Okay, actually, that brings up a question that I've been seeing a lot on Founders Mix, our new community site. People are wondering about how can you make sure that when you're having conversations about launching a new business, that one of the partners isn't going to take the business idea and run, that the partnership owns the idea, that it's a real business when you're just getting started. Actually, I guess there's several issues there. How did you resolve them? Go ahead.
In the beginning, you know, there was nothing to lose. It wasn't like a great idea or something. You know, if someone had run with it, it's like, you know, anyone would have been pissed. This was, in other words, you start with very low expectation. That was why it worked out, I guess. And we, of course, all trusted each other. Tony is a good friend. Just last night, I met him for dinner, so we're still really close friends. So that's, you know, trust matters. And, you know, to be honest, in our case, it wasn't like we were thinking of Zoho now at that time. It was 15 years ago. We were thinking of, you know, how to put food on the table. So there's some small ideas.
I'm sorry, you were thinking about what?
Like having, you know, something to do. He left his job and my brother left his job. I left my job in Qualcomm. So how do we put food on the table? That's the first goal. Not, you know, a company was all secondary. I mean, there was no company yet.
But there was no sense that maybe you were going to put food on the table and then Tony would take the whole business idea and run with it, and along with it, your chance of putting food on the table?
Yeah, actually, in the beginning, it was in Tony's name. Really, the company in New Jersey was in Tony's name. That wasn't 100% owned by. So we reorganized it a couple of years later. So there was all trust. And there was so much trust between us. So that is why it worked. And I would say that is, you know, before there's business, there has to be trust. So you have to be able to trust people and trust each other. And you have to have the history to trust.
Have to have the history.
So in our case, you are right. I mean, Tony had the company originally.
And in retrospect, was that the right move? Or do you look back on yourself and you say, man, we were so much younger and less experienced back then. We probably should have done things differently. And it was luck that got this to work out.
But, we gave ourselves a lot of time to learn, to make mistakes and learn. Right. So we had this software that started selling a little better, but not a lot. I mean, 100K or 200K sales was a lot for us then. Then once, you know, that gave us money to survive, then we started thinking of next idea, next idea, next idea. So you can think of it as a series of startups in one. That's how we should think of this.
Okay, I'd like to explore those startups. Let's talk about the first one. What was the first startup in that series?
Yeah, the product actually we still sell today, to this day. And that's a product called SNMP API. SNMP, that's Simple Network Management Protocol. It doesn't, you don't know it. And that is a product that Tony pretty much wrote himself, actually. He was like a one author. He wrote it maybe over 6 months or 4 or 5 months. And then we launched it on a website called adventnet.com. That was the website he had. Advent. He named the company Advent Network Management. That was the name he chose. And he couldn't get the advent.com domain, so he chose adventnet.com domain. And that's how it launched. And he didn't have an idea of who it would be selling to. He thought some developers like him would be interested in it. And yeah, there was some interest, and you know, this came from the network equipment vendors in the beginning. So most of the customers were guys like Cisco and Nortel then, and all of those guys. And that wasn't expected in the beginning. He didn't know who the customer would be. Then once he started getting some interest, and this was the time when, you know, my brother had gone back to India, and he was started helping out with, you know, he hired one of my other brothers who actually was the lead engineer on this project. And that's how it all got started. And who hired a friend? I mean, it slowly grew on itself. And once we started getting, we needs to be formally, you know, selling and marketing this. And I was in Silicon Valley at that time. And I still didn't have a paycheck, but I was here in the right place. So I became the salesman, basically. So, and once it grew, and 3 years later, he said, you know, you should be the CEO because you are the one with the business knowledge here, business savvy. I didn't have any business.
Yes. Sorry, guys. The connection is a little bit funky today, but we'll just do our best to go through it, to deal with it. Okay. You said the first you guys had a product, then you were looking for the customers for it. In retrospect, yeah. Was that a mistake? Should you have examined the market? Should you have figured out what the market needed and then come out with a product for that market? Or do you think that it was the right move?
Well, in this case, really, Tony knew something about this particular area. He worked in this in Bell Labs. So he had actually worked in this network management, managing networks. Still, he imagined the customer would be a company like AT&T. But it turned out not the case because, you know, reaching a customer like AT&T is really hard. So even though he knew what the requirements of AT&T would be, there was no way for a tiny 2%, you know, 3% company to reach AT&T. So when he put it out, it's actually the Java developers who are working on these areas that were interested. I wouldn't say that was totally expected, but in hindsight, it wasn't totally unexpected.
How did the Java developers even find you guys and know what you guys were working on?
I think he probably participated in news groups and listed it in various sites then, the Yahoo directory and things like
that. So discussion boards and directories is where you guys got your first customers.
Yeah, this was before Google. You have to remember, there was no Google yet.
Yeah.
At that time.
And we're going to get to Google because I know that factored into your growth also. But message boards, just the free conversations that anyone can join online, that's where you got your first customers?
Yes. Okay. That's how they found us. That's not how we found the customer. Remember, these are Java developers, and at that time there was not the number of Java developers was small, wasn't mm-hmm. so big as now. So, and they find us, and they then mostly they use the product free. It was an API they could integrate, and then their companies, their employers, usually it could be a Cisco, it could be a Nokia, for example, and then they say, look, we want to license this as part of our shipping product. How much is it going to cost? Okay, we'll pay you $5,000, $10,000. That's how the conversation started.
I see. Okay. All right. And when you said earlier that you were the salesman, you didn't have any sales experience. How did you become the salesman of the operation?
Well, I was the only one here in Silicon Valley, and so everyone else was writing code. So I just by de facto became the salesman, and we couldn't afford to pay any professional salesman. So I am the salesman.
So then how'd you find your first customers? Can you walk me through the whole sales process back then?
Well, they found us. To be honest, I still would have trouble cold calling people myself. So I'm not that good at it. But they found us, and then they call us. In fact, many times customers would give me friendly advice how to sell because they realized I'm not a very professional salesman. So they would tell me, there was once a customer told me after signing the agreement, you should have asked me 10 times the money. I would have paid you. You don't even know how to ask for money. That was a good educational experience. Somebody tells you I would have paid you 10 times if you had just asked.
So at first, were you just an order taker?
Basically an order. Yeah.
And just explaining, well, more than an order taker because you had to explain the product, you had to...
Yeah, that I could do because I'm an engineer, so I could explain the product well, but I didn't know how to ask for money. That was the part that I didn't know.
I see.
And I didn't know how to ask for how much money, the right amount of money. And that's where company advisor took sort of pity on me and said, well, you know, you ought to ask for more money. You don't know.
And that guy told you after you closed the sale. How did you become a better salesman? How did you know what to charge? How did you evolve?
Actually, once we had some money, I hired a good salesman.
You
that's
did.
That's really a secret. So we said, okay, this is not going to work. I'm not the greatest sales guy in the world. So we hired a professional salesperson who came in and so.
All right, let me ask you more detailed questions about that. If you're not a good salesman yourself, how do you know what to look for and how to train another salesman?
Yeah, in this case, that's not how it happened. Actually, there was a company that approached us to buy us, and he was in their, you know, product management, marketing type of group, and he had also done sales before for, you know, similar companies. So he had extensive knowledge of the business side, much more so than I did. And he said, you know, you should get acquired by us. I said, well, why don't you join us? I need a person like you. And he thought about it for 2 or 3 months. He said, you're still making a mistake. You should take the money now. I said, no, I would much rather have you here. He saw how determined we were, so he joined us. That's how it happened, actually. Then he basically took it forward from that point onwards.
In the chat room, Viking Abroad is saying, cough, Salesforce, cough. Is it Salesforce?
Oh, no. This was, you know, at that time, this was, you know,
this is way
company.
Before Salesforce, but we know that Salesforce approached you.
That company doesn't even exist now. That company which tried to acquire us doesn't exist.
Okay, so that's how you found him. How did you train him? How did you make sure that he was on track, that he knew where to go?
Well, he already knew enough about our product to want to acquire us
okay.
for his company. So he knew about our product. So that was my sales pitch to him. Hey, you think so well of us that you want to acquire us. Why don't you just come work for us and take the product forward? Take, you know, create sales for us. And that's what he ended up doing, actually.
I see. Okay.
He's still with us, by the way. He's a vice president here. He's still with us, and he's happy. I mean, he's so we retain people long term. He's still with us.
Okay, that was the first startup. What's the next major startup that you evolved into?
So by 2000, we were doing really well. I mean, we were highly profitable and a lot of sales because we all now had a professional sales team.
Okay.
And all of that happened. See, our customer base at the time was primarily the network equipment vendors. I don't know how many people remember this. If you, in Silicon Valley in 2000, if you threw a stone, you would hit a networking company, basically. You would land on a startup, which was a networking company. Much like how it looks in Palo Alto and Web 2.0 today. Practically everybody on University Avenue is in Web 2.0, right? But the same thing was true in networking at that time. Like, you know, all these optical companies, cable modems, DSL, ATM, all of that. And those were our customers. You know, in fact, we sold to maybe 200, 300 of these startups just around the valley. And that created a problem because in 2001, 2002, that bubble had burst. Almost all of those companies vanished. In fact, among the customers we sold to at that time, maybe one or two are alive today. Of course, the big ones, Cisco, and those are there, but the smaller ones, they all vanished. So we had money, we had an engineering team, but our business had changed suddenly. So that's when we reinvented ourselves. We decided to go after, now I decided this time, we shouldn't be selling only to just a, you know, small number of customers. We should create products that sell to a broader market.
You should, I'm sorry, you should, instead of going after the network equipment vendors, a small pool of customers, you decided that you should go after who?
Just diversify. Basically, we still have networking customers, but we wanted to diversify our product portfolio to address a broader audience. That was the goal. And we chose small and mid-sized businesses because there's lots of them. I like having lots of customers. So that's how we went after that.
Okay, so you went after a different customer base in addition to the customers that you were with. Right. Let's talk about what life was like during that transition. So can you say how much your revenues were at that moment when all these companies were dying?
We were doing about 10 million a year.
10 million a year. And then after they started dying, what did your revenues dip down to?
It dropped maybe about 30% immediately. That's what happened.
Within a matter of months, you went from 10 million in revenue to 7 million annualized. Sorry?
It took about a year. It
took about a year.
Yeah.
And you lost about 30% of your business?
Business, unfortunately, we would have lost even more, but we were saved by the fact that there was a telecom boom in China and in Japan. And so as the US market tapered off, the telecom boom burst, there was a boom in China and that picked up. And so we made up some of our lost revenue that way, but not all of it. That's why it would have been maybe 70% drop in revenue, if not for China and Japan then at that time.
Okay. And so what happened to your profits? Did you start losing money?
No, actually, I don't believe we ever lost money. Perhaps we lost money for a quarter, but we pretty much were breaking even most of the time, most of the way.
Okay.
Because we run a very tight ship. We decided once our revenue was dropping like that, we knew the market had changed. So we became really conservative. We went into cash conservation, but changed our strategy to actually provide, once more focus on product development, less on sales and marketing at that time, because there was not much point in trying to reach more customers. The customers were vanishing. So we focused on product development, back to engineering. That's why it's almost like a second startup now.
Did you have to fire people in the sales department?
At that time, yes, we had salespeople in the US we had to let go because they were not selling anything at all.
What was it like inside the company, inside your head during that period? You're the guy in charge, you're the founder, you're the one everyone looks to, you're the one who has to fix it.
Yeah, it was really difficult. In fact, that's one of the reasons, there were totally 5 co-founders in this. Only 2 of us are remaining today because of those. It's really not, it's very complicated. What happened is, at some level, you're going through month after month, quarter after quarter, year after year of this stagnation. It gets to you. You don't see a way out. And each person has different opinions on how to go about it. So we finally, that's the time. It's like sort of a marriage ending in divorce. That's when both my brother and Tony, they all ended up departing the company. That's what happened this all happened in around 2003 timeframe. So those two and a half years were really hard time for us. Not because, we're losing money, but because it was just depressing time. We didn't have a new product line yet. We didn't know whether that would succeed. There was a lot of existential questions. There were times when we thought maybe we are not really cut out for all this. Maybe we should just sell and get out. Those were thoughts that really did occur.
Why didn't you then?
Still at a very fundamental level, liked building products, and we all liked it. We were engineers at heart, and we knew it won't be any different anywhere. These problems, at some level, we knew that these were not our making. I mean, it was a bomb, and we had been exposed to it, and that bomb and resources, we had to do something new. So that's that thought was still so fun going through it. The problem was what to do. That was where the differences were. There were a lot of difference of opinion on what to do within the founding team.
Okay, how did you figure out what to do?
So we, each of them, now each of them have their own companies. Tony has a company, my brother Kumar has a company, my another brother who joined them, then he has a company. So each of them have their own companies now. And so it's, and they each run a startup. And we decided at that point, once, they all departed, but became clear, I have to now take this forward. So I had an idea what to do, and that idea became our next product line, Manage Engine. And that's how we recovered from that time period.
How did you come up with Manage Engine? Was it did you look at the market and say, this is what we need, IT management software? Did your customers start telling you that? Did someone internally spot the opportunity?
Well, it was very close to what we were already doing. Right, we already had software to manage networks, so that was our business. It's just that the market is now different. We were selling to mainly the equipment vendors, OEMs. Now we are selling to more end customers. So we had, of course, change the product to suit end customers, but it's still similar domain for us. So it wasn't that big a change from a domain perspective. And we knew there was a market because we knew there were other companies selling such software profitably, and we knew we had the right technology. We just didn't have the right product mix, so we changed the product mix and we did it, and it did really work out well.
All right, you mentioned earlier that you guys run a lean ship, and I've got a quote here also from that Forbes article where you said that you are cheap as hell. Actually, maybe they said you're cheap as hell, but you've got a reputation one way or the other for being tight with money. How does it manifest itself? How cheap are you? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, a good example, our office is in Pleasanton, okay? It's not, it's outside of, it's in East Bay, if you know the Bay Area. It's a lot cheaper than being in Silicon Valley. And at that time, the rent was less than half the rent here. And a lot of people would have said, oh, you've got to be in the valley, it's hot. I don't care. I mean, we are in Pleasanton, it's only a 35, 40 minute commute for me. It's no big deal. And we save, you know, more than half rent. So that's the, you know, that's the kind of things we do. So.
I see, okay. All right, so let's go into the next major startup. Is that Soho, Zoho.com? I keep saying Soho when I mean to say Zoho, Zoho.com.
Yeah, that came up because once this managed engine started taking off, and we knew we were successful.
Sorry, the connection broke off. What you were saying is that once Management Engine took off, you knew
Managed Engine took off, our engineers started dreaming bigger dreams. What are we going to do next? And that was the time all of these web apps were starting to happen. And we ourselves, in fact, part of the motivation was we ourselves were users of Salesforce, customers of Salesforce, customers of WebEx, and we were using these things to sell our own products, right? You know, our CRM system was Salesforce at the time. And I looked at it and I said, there's no way this is worth what they're charging. There's no way this is worth $65 we are paying. I'm cheap, as you know. And I said, I could create a better product and sell it at a lower price. That was the motivation. So we said, okay, let's set up a team and do it. Take them on. That's how it happened.
What was the first one that you came out with? It's a suite of products that includes today way more than I could even list. Word processing, spreadsheets, web-based conferences, tech support over the web, just CRM, so many different web apps. But what was the first one?
Yeah, so we actually, what we got started with was CRM, but it wasn't the one first launched. What got launched was the word processor later. So even though that got started later.
So in fact,
this is how it happened.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, once we got started on this web app thing, and that's when our team got really motivated. We are a thought engineers. They said we could actually do the office suite. We have the know-how how to do this. So they said, okay, we'll set up an experiment. We launched the word processor after about 3 or 4 months of effort, and that got some interest. Then we said, we are in it. We are going all the way. So that's how it happened.
How long did it take you to launch the first version?
First version was maybe about 3 or 4 months.
Really. 3 or 4 months.
So, yeah.
And what did it look like, that first version?
Not very good. But it was early days, right? People are forgiving of a lot of sins that they won't forgive today in an online word processor. So.
Okay. But the one that you wanted to start off with, the one that got you excited, was contact relationship management. You wanted to compete with Salesforce on a smaller level.
Yeah. And that actually, it took longer. The reason is we initially did it as a product, a downloadable product. Remember, that was our heritage. We were a software company. And then we realized that's not a good way to go. We have to make it on demand. And so we had to basically rewrite the whole thing to be on demand, an online app. So that took time. While when we started the word processor, we started as an online app. So that was launched sooner. So we made mistakes along the way, actually. We went with the product and then we changed direction. A lot of that happened in Sierra.
What did you think the pricing model would be?
So in CRM, we price it at $12 per month per user. In fact, the first 3 users are free, and the 4th user is $12. And Salesforce offers a similar version for $60, $65 now. So that's the direct comparison. We directly compare.
And but that was the original model. You just wanted to offer something a little more basic for a lot less money.
No, we actually wanted to offer this as a downloadable product. The price would have been the same, but we just wanted to offer it. Customer hosts it themselves. Online is better, so we changed it. We don't offer a download product on that now.
I see. You don't offer, I'm sorry, you don't offer what right now?
You don't offer a downloaded product.
I see.
That you can install yourself.
It's all web-based, nothing to download. Okay. And where were you getting your customers?
So in Zoho, it's really a lot of word of mouth marketing. That's how it is happening. In ManageEngine, we, of course, advertise heavily on Google. You will see that, if you typical, keywords that for help desk and any of those, we would be both ranked well on Google, and we also advertise. On Zoho, a lot of our customer base is coming because of word of mouth, basically. We don't do a lot of marketing yet on Zoho. That's something that might change in the future.
Okay. Sorry, earlier, since you brought up advertising for ManageEngine, earlier I said that Google factored in a lot. That's what helped you guys take off, as I understand it. Is that right?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons. Actually, we had a good product, and it's also now time. A lot of small and mid-sized businesses are searching on Google for these products. So Google became our real, way to get the sales leads to sell to.
Okay. All right. And back to Zoho. How do you guys compare to Google Apps? Someone's asking in the audience, a guy named TP.
Yeah. So if you look at, there's only, first of all, only half of the apps. Zoho is split into two parts. One is the whole Office suite and Mail, which directly competes with Google Apps. Then there's the whole CRM, project management, and there's a product called Zoho Creator, reporting, online reporting solution, meeting. All of these, they don't compete with Google. So there's only about less than half of Zoho actually competes with Google. On that part, we compete. Our focus is on really much more depth of functionality. So it's really, Google has a certain minimalist approach to product that is enough for a customer. We think that the product has to be really full-featured and rich in terms of functionality. Have we got there fully? No, not yet. In the Office suite, it's still going to take some more time. But even today, I believe our product will be much richer than Google's. So that's the real difference.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on it today before our interview, and absolutely, you just need to look at the first screenshot to see that Zoho has way more features than Google in just about in every single app that they compete. And there are many apps, as you said, where you guys don't compete, like there's no meeting software from Google, there's no help desk, there's no invoicing software from Google, and you guys offer all of those. How can you offer so many products and still stay on top of them?
Yeah, so it's, the secret is we run a lot of parallel teams. And so each team is pretty much, they have their own mandate, and there's a product manager and a team that runs well. So the reason we can do it all is I don't interfere a lot. I run a fairly loose thing, and we can do this as a private company. That's another reason we stay private. Because public companies try to do this, they will, and they cannot do it because there is a lot of, revenue pressures and quarterly pressures. For example, I have to make sure I have to go and order a Zoho CRM product manager. You have to give me this much this quarter or else, right? Because I have to make a commitment to public shareholders. So in our case, we don't make any public commitments. So there is a lot more freedom possible.
So what kind of sacrifices have you made that to the short-term bottom line?
We, as an example, when we decided to rewrite Zoho CRM, there was actually a market for our downloadable product. There were customers asking for it. But we decided long-term the market is going on demand. So we will actually rewrite this. We'll pull the product, rewrite this, rather than put it out and earn the revenue then and there. So that was a sacrifice. It took actually about a year and a half delayed because of this. We made that sacrifice intentionally. So we still do a lot of these product management decisions where we sacrifice the short term for the long term. As a public company, it's a lot harder. However much they like to do this, it's a lot harder. And that's one of the reasons why we are private and we will remain private. As long as I have anything to say about it, we are not going to go public. So,
what are the other reasons for staying private?
That's again, I dislike the public culture that has developed, particularly the Wall Street culture. The fact that I have to deal with a company like Goldman Sachs just puts me off, basically. And this was not because of the last year. I knew those guys were enough. Guys like them were parasites on the economy. I don't want to deal with them. So.
Aditi in the audience is saying, Zoho is very much loved by Michael Arrington and the guys over at TechCrunch, so you've gotten a lot of coverage from TechCrunch. I know I've listened to Leo Laporte on This Week in Tech talk about how much he loves Zoho and how he prefers it over Google. But what Leo, who tests and uses every new thing out there, says is something that I think is on a lot of people's minds. Shouldn't we stay with Google? Isn't Google going to be the leader in this space? All these other guys are just probably going to go away. How do you react to that? How can you answer people who are concerned?
Well, Google came on the scene in 2006. It's March of 2006, to be precise. It's exactly 4 years now, actually, since Google came on board. And in 4 years, they haven't, killed us. We are still going strong. In fact, we are stronger than ever. So, people think, make a little too much, even against Microsoft. Think about this. WordPerfect is still alive, actually. In fact, last time I checked, they were 100, 200 million in revenue. So this company has a viable business. 200 million in revenue is nothing to sneeze at, right? Even a WordPerfect, which Microsoft has completely vanquished. Destroyed, finished, right? So companies kill themselves. If they, WordPerfect, had a good leadership, good energy, that 200 million could be used to provide something valuable with it. Something could be done with it. So long term, if you have a determination, you can do customer base. We have no depth of customers. It's really today, the clock we are running against is to get the product suite to be mature, to solve the customer needs fully. We are still, getting there. I won't say Zoho Suite is perfect. We still have a lot of work to do. If we do that, I'm confident we have a customer base. It doesn't matter if Google does 10 billion and we only do 500 million. I'm happy. That's fine. We are private. That's why we are private.
I see. In fact, in preparation for this interview, I looked at a few of your past interviews and I looked at some past articles about you and Zoho, and that question comes up all the time. Even before Microsoft and Google got in the space, you were being asked what happens when they do get in the space, and it looks like it's just the big question that's out there. You recently started using Google on Zoho, where people can now register, or in fact, you don't even need to register anymore. You can just use your Google account to log in to Zoho. How'd you decide to make that decision?
No, we actually, from the beginning, we always felt that we have to sell, whether they are on Yahoo, whether they are on Google, whether they are on Salesforce, wherever, whatever choice they were made, our product has to fit into that. That's an early decision. That's part of, again, not having a corporate ego. We don't have a lot of ego in this company. In fact, our product managers are humble. We encourage humility as a value in this company. So people are going to use Google. Google is going to be there always, right? So how can we serve Google's current customer base, current user base, with products that, let's say you are a Google Apps user, you need a CRM, you need a project management system. We are very happy to offer that to you without saying, you have to switch all of it from Google to us. We don't ask for that. And so that's an incremental revenue. I'm very happy to have that.
Okay, let's talk about this. A lot of people are trying to create just one web app and have it be successful. Their whole business is designed around getting just one off the ground right. You've got 22 that are all up and running, that are all doing well. What advice do you have for the person who's looking to build a company around one web app? How can they make it work?
It really depends on the kind of app you're talking about. It is possible to make really good showing in one app. There are companies that do that successfully, and many of them we have done. It has to be best of breed in that category.
I'm
a great believer in.
I apologize. The connection went bad. You were saying it has to be best of breed. Can you pick it up from there?
Yeah. So if you really put passion and soul in your product, it shows, and the customers do notice. And from the other side, you make it easy for the customer to experience it. Like, for example, like what we do. We provide the Google sign-in and Yahoo and whatnot, and just make it easier for the customer. Then there is a market. I believe that even a smaller player with one or two apps can survive, and there's a lot of great examples of that.
So, best of breed, can you give me more? Can you give me more, maybe more specific? Like, are there ways to explain a web app that help get people to register quickly? Are there ways of thinking about the user's needs that will help you take all the features that you can create and add into your product and simplify them into the handful that you have to?
Let me first, before I go on. Let me clarify. I have in mind the paid apps, subscription-based applications people use for work. I'm not an expert on any consumer web app, really. In fact, so my advice should be taken with a huge grain, because most of the apps out there are really consumer-focused, ad-driven. We have never done any advertising revenue model, so I don't know how that game works at all. So that would be useless to ask. In the subscription category, that's where I know a little bit better, and there people are willing to pay for really good apps. We look at, for example, 37 Signals apps and FreshBooks. All of them are doing a week, but they're doing well. So and why is that? Because they have really good apps that they satisfy their customers, and the market is big enough for all of us, particularly for the smaller players. And for private companies, there is really no, I don't believe, we don't have an ego that we have to be, X, and we have projections to Wall Street and all of that. So we can go on this.
Why did you decide to go for paid and not offer them free plus advertising?
No, we still have a free version. We have a freemium model. We have free version, but we don't use advertising as our revenue source. We actually charge the customer, and that's how we subsidize the free, basically. And the free operates as our marketing.
How did you decide to do that instead of offering everything for free and make the money with advertising?
Because if you look at our apps, whether it's CRM, whether it's word processor, whether it's a presentation, you really don't want to see an ad. For example, if Skype were to throw in an ad right now, during this video session, we would all hate Skype. Right?
Yeah.
Some things don't mix well. I mean, on Google, when you're searching, ads mix well. When you're reading a newspaper, ads mix well. But when I'm doing a spreadsheet or a presentation software, ads don't mix well. So that's really why.
Okay. All right. Word of mouth, as you said, how you get customers. How do you juice that? How do you encourage people to spread the word even more?
It's, at first level, have a really good product. Customers will speak up if you have a really good product. And that's really our foundation, our real motivation, our real focus here is let's get the product to really make it awesome. Have we reached it? No, I would be honest in saying, but that is our first goal. Get the product to be really awesome. Delight the user. Then supplemented with ads, we will definitely have some marketing on Google and elsewhere.
Sorry, you're saying that a little bit of Google advertising also to get people.
And our products are not inherently viral in the sense a social network or a video site is. So it's not like, if somebody uses our spreadsheet, it doesn't mean there's something inherently viral about the spreadsheet. Of course, they will share a spreadsheet with somebody, but that's a second order effect. It's not really primary reason people use a spreadsheet. So
right. It's
not viral, but there is a word of mouth that's still viral. People like it, they talk about it, but we get more users. We have seen that.
What about PR? How are you getting so much attention on blogs like TechCrunch with guys like Leo Laporte?
A lot of it has to do with the fact that we keep innovating. We keep coming out with new stuff. There's no real magic. It's not like there's some secret sauce here. TechCrunch won't cover us if we were not doing something interesting. So that's really all.
So every time you've got a new app out there, there's another reason for the bloggers to write.
Yeah, and every time we do something new, innovative, that is, something original, of course people are willing to cover.
But you also reach out to them, right?
Yeah, we have a...
Sorry, the connection broke off again. I apologize, the connection broke off again. You were saying, yes, we have, and then I lost you.
Yeah, we have Raju Vagesna, who's our Zoho evangelist,
uh-huh.
who is constantly giving demonstrations, showcasing our products to people, journalists, bloggers, analysts. He's constantly day in and day out, that's what he's doing. So he has relationships with all of them. So it is really helpful. I mean, Raju has done an awesome job definitely getting the word out for us.
And also, I've got to say one thing that I noticed that you guys are really good at is listening too. I got an interview with you because I put on Twitter my desire to interview the guy behind Zoho. I didn't even put much more than that. Someone at your office emailed me and said, I think I could help. What can I do? And boom, a few weeks later, you and I are here doing an interview. Guys, if you have any questions, ask them in the comments. I'll do my best to get to as many of them as I can. What were some of the marketing strategies that were, all right, here's a question. I'm going to take a piece of your question, music trainer in the audience. What are some of the marketing strategies that were not effective?
That's interesting. We have tried banner ads before. I mean, the display ads. I won't say they were that effective. That doesn't mean we won't do it. They have an effect for branding, but they don't have direct effect on user registrations or revenue immediately. But it does have a long-term effect on branding. So that's one thing that wasn't as effective as we would have thought.
So you were buying ads, they were getting your brand out there, but you weren't seeing conversions on your site from the banners.
Yes.
I
Yeah.
see.
Yeah.
What piece of your overall business is Zoho?
Today, Zoho is about 10% of our overall business, but it's the fastest growing. Zoho is growing at 150, 200% a year. So, in 2 to 3 years, I expect Zoho to be maybe 40% of the business.
40% of the business in 2 or 3 years.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
We still have other business. I mean, we are very strong. The reason why we are able to do all this is the company has been built over a more than a decade of blood, sweat, and tears, and so there's a solid company, there's solid engineering, there's solid resources, both financial and of course human resources. Human resources are far more important. So if we decide to go into a new product category, for example, now we can bring on board quickly a good team, assemble a team, a leadership, all of that. That's part of what we have built.
PL is exactly three. I don't know what kind of username that is. He's saying, Andrew, this is a great interview. He's making engineers look interesting. Of course, of course. And he's more than an engineer. He's a CEO. Did anyone come
I'm
up?
still an engineer, by the way. I read Hacker News. I follow
Oh, you do read
programming.
Hacker News.
Yeah, of course I do.
What's your
And
name on Hacker News?
I have Sridhar Rainbow, actually, my
Did you
name.
see when your story was voted up to the front page?
I did, and I actually responded to some questions there
Oh,
at
you
the time.
did.
People asked questions, I did respond. So I might be happy. I'm there on Hacker News every day. I am on, I'm monitoring Twitter. I'm on our forums. I respond to our customer queries on forums. So I'm still an engineer, and I still actually read some code. I mean, I like, for example, my most recent code reading experience was jQuery. I'm really impressed with jQuery. So that's me.
Oh, cool. All right, there you go. I was wrong. Let's see. I want to take more questions from the audience. And you know what? Since you are on Hacker News, if this makes it to the Hacker News homepage, if anyone has any questions for him, please post it on Hacker News. It'll be good
Yeah,
for me
I'd be very
too.
happy to respond there as well.
Yeah, I'll be happy if people ask questions there because then this interview will get voted up over there, and I get so much traffic from them, and it's quality traffic. It's people like you, who are reading. Okay, let's see. All right, Nirvana's asking, did anyone come up with any innovative app use with? I shouldn't read these literally. Did anyone come up with any innovative apps using Zoho API?
Yeah, there were actually been several interesting things on it. We have seen from sort of law schools, people training for lawyers, some unexpected ones. In fact, the entrepreneur.com magazine did some interesting things with it for their audience of really micro businesses. These are not really even SMBs, people who go to entrepreneur or subscribers of the Entrepreneur magazine. And they put up a whole bunch of agreements and all of that, a lot of that, and the Zoho tools are used there. So these things are very interesting, and we have always been very supportive of all this.
Okay, do you have another example?
Zoho Creator is used in a variety of ways that have surprised us in the last year or two. There's a lot of case studies in our site on Zoho Creator that you can find. For example, there was a school principal who was collaborating with teachers on on everyday activity using an app they custom built on Zoho Creator.
Okay.
They put it together quickly, and they are not professional programmers.
And Zoho Creator is a word processor, right?
No, Zoho Creator is actually an online app creator.
I see.
Think of it like I don't want to say even VB, something like a type of an app,
Something like a what
and
type of app? I'm sorry.
a file maker.
FileMaker, I see.
So that type of a, it's really a online app creator. So it brings a sort of an IDE feel, but really for non-programmers. You don't have to be a professional programmer to use it. It's an easy app creation. That's why I'm interested in programming languages, by the way. The reason I study programming languages is how to create these tools that non-programmers can productively use. That is my obsession, actually.
So ultimately, you'd like to create platforms for us not to create Word documents and spreadsheets, but to create our own web apps.
Yes, Yes, but I, in this sense, I mean, I want to say this clearly. This is not really intended for the Hacker News JavaScript or Lisp hackers or Python hackers. It's really intended for that small businessman who doesn't have any resources, who needs to solve a quick problem. So that's where our focus is.
Do you have an
It's
example
because
of
the
somebody
professional
who
problem,
might be
whether
able to
it's
use
Ruby,
this?
Python, the problem is solved.
Do you have an example of a use case?
So if you look at today, it's really interesting. If you look at VB originally, VB is the most popular programming language in the world. But you look at who is using it, it's not sales professionals, people who are really, power users, spreadsheet users writing macros. And that is the audience Go Creator is going after. And that's why I study programming languages on how to make them more productive in their businesses, solving business problems.
I see. Okay. All right. A few people in the audience, including Thomas B, are asking, what's the next app to come from Zoho?
I wish I could.
Man.
More apps spending in the next coming in the next 3 4 months, but we don't pre-announce any of the apps.
Okay. All right. So I want to thank you for doing this interview with me and for dealing with all the technical issues before we got started and throughout. And thank you actually for just even hearing that I was looking to do an interview with you and coming on Mixergy and answering all these questions.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Andrew. I really appreciate your time giving us the opportunity to be, to be interviewed on Sunday. Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thank you. And Andrew SG in the audience is saying not if, but when this will be on Hacker News is what I should be saying. When this will be on Hacker News, will you be upvoting it?
And I'd be very happy to answer questions there. Thank you.
Okay. He will be upvoting it and answering questions. And guys, to the audience too, thank you for sticking with this interview all the way through because of the technical issues. I really got great guests here and a great audience that's willing to deal with some technical issues because these ideas are just so helpful. I love listening to entrepreneurs talk about how they built their business. I love hearing you talk about some of the setbacks and how you got through them. And if any of these ideas are helpful, thank my guest Sridhar, how am I doing with the pronunciation of your name?
That's good, actually. That's good. See, it's a little bit hard for Americans because the accent is on the first syllable. It's more like Sridhar. You can
Sridhar.
convert the A into U, then it will make sense.
A into U. So if it was Sridhar,
Sridhar.
Sridhar.
That would be
Ah, I
good.
see. Sridhar. You didn't do what I did. I took my foreign name and I Americanized it. I called myself Andrew Warner. Anyone who can see the video of this interview knows that I'm no Andrew Warner, but makes it easy for people. Sridhar, thank you for doing this interview, guys. Thank you all for listening. I'm Andrew. I'll see you all in the comments.